Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. Kia ora tātou. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, and I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And with us today is the Honourable Tracy Martin. And Tracy is well known to our listeners over the past 2 years. We've had her on the program regularly, usually about once a year. And the last time we spoke was last year, and you were going to Australia, taking a team with you to look into what the Australians were doing in terms of at the government level, and that's the federal level as well as the state level, looking into how aged care was going to be funded, how they were going to cope with a rapidly increasing ageing population. And as they were ahead of the ball game, it made sense to go. And when you came back, you shared some of the insights and began a very stringent campaign to get change in New Zealand. And that involved a lot of collaboration across the aged care sector. But before I continue this interview, I want to say that you are the CE, Tracy, of a very important group, the Aged Care Association. And you are not involved with the retirement village industry, and you don't represent them, and you are not involved with the home care providers. Those are the people who go into people's homes and provide care. You don't do spokesperson's roles for those two parts of the ageing population's sector. So I just want to make that very clear from the outset. So, Tracy, welcome.
Daughter, thank you very much for having me.
And it's a delight. Now, as we, I've just outlined where we've been and where you're focused in getting that collaboration and getting change, getting the voices heard from the people who are involved with aged care and providing aged care, the fear about not having enough beds with the rising dementia population, as well as the rising complex cases in older age where people are lasting longer but in poorer health. So on that note, I want to hear from you how you feel the collaboration has gone, what's been good about it, what's been productive, what are some of the benefits that you've seen fall out of this, and what might be things that would be nice to have, and if you can give us, you know, your summary of your experience over the last year.
Sure. So quite a lot has changed over the last year. So as you referred to, we last spoke when I just returned from Australia, and I had taken members of the Health Select Committee, as well as what I call sort of some of my army of allies, which was the Chief Executive of Alzheimer's New Zealand, the Chief Executive of Hospice New Zealand, the CE of NZ Health, which is an in-home, one of the largest in-home care providers here in New Zealand, and also the Chief Executive of Kate McLean, which is also a in-home care provider business but that delivers to private providers. So we went to Australia. We were focused mostly in Canberra and in Sydney, and had lots of meetings with not only government officials and government departments there, but also providers in the area that were living through the reform in Australia. So what was positive about that was, one, seeing the things that worked and the things that didn't work. So things that New Zealand should look to implement, but things that New Zealand should stay very, very far away from. But also the relationships that were created on that trip between all of the individuals that were there. And the Health Select Committee's inquiry into the provision of aged care for those with cognitive decline and cognitive challenges had not been completed at the time we went to Australia. So the Health Select Committee's report came out post our Australian visit. And what was good about that timing was that because some members of the committee had come on that trip, they then reopened submissions to bring into their inquiry the Independent Pricing Authority in Australia, the Chief Executive of Ageing Australia, so that their experiences and their suggestions could be considered as part of that New Zealand inquiry. The Select Committee report was given to the government about November last year. Mm-hmm. And the other positive thing that has happened in the last 12 months is that the current government has created a ministerial advisory group of experts from across the in-home care, residential care sector and primary health sector, chaired by David Cunliffe, to provide ministers with what are the steps that we need to take to actually be able to make sure that our older New Zealanders who will need residential care will be able to access it wherever they live in New Zealand. So those are two really positive things that came out of that Australian trip.
And that's very good news, I think, because I think even now, post Te Whatu Ora and the focus on bringing things towards a national decision-making model, we have still a case of the lottery where you live can dictate what care is available, what you have access to, and how you might even be funded or not for certain services. So hearing about this task force, this ministerial task force, and what its focus is quite exciting. And I believe they're due to report very soon.
They are. So their report should be out in the next 6 to 8 weeks. I know that the government is, well, the ministers, so Minister Brown and Minister Costello, are considering the draft report at the moment, the recommendations. So the moment that they are comfortable with the work of the advisory group, they will put that report out. And one of the other positives about the advisory group and the work that they've been doing is Minister Costello has tried to ensure that the opposition parties are also all briefed on the work as it's been being done in an attempt to depoliticise this issue, because we all of us need to be on the same page about how we're going to look after our older generation, and so it's not a political football. She's the Labor Party and the leader, you know, the spokesperson for the opposition has been informed all the way along about the work of the advisory group, which is good. It's been a positive step.
Yeah, that's very important, because I think the politics have become very divisive over the last 2 years of what we hear, what is in the papers and how it's presented. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, whether in fact that gets the control or the massaging it should in order to sift through some of the things that are going on that are not that are not thrown in the laundry of the political basket, but are given a proper strategic airing as a long-term issue that's, you know, beyond parties, that you need a long-term focus for.
We have to remember we do have a Westminster system of democracy. So the Westminster system is set up on the basis of, it's an adversarial basis. You have a government and you have an opposition. Mm. And it's called a debate chamber. And so, therefore, if your moot is that you are for this, then our moot must be that we are against it. So that is how our political system runs. It's what it's been set up on. And often it uncovers, you know, fishhooks or holes in legislation that wouldn't have been uncovered if we all just agreed with ourselves all the time. So, but there are, you're right, there are certain things that don't need to be argued about. And I would suggest that the fact that at least one in five over 85-year-olds for the next 70 years is going to need to have aged residential care means that we don't need to argue about it. Those are facts. We need to make sure that it's there.
Thank you for that headline, because I think we really need to hear that. One in five over 85 and for the next 70 years are going to need some form of dedicated care. And presumably that is not in their homes.
Well, most over 85-year-olds, and why do I keep talking about 85-year-olds? Because that's the average age of entry now into residential care.
Mm.
So whether it's at rest home level or hospital level or psychogeriatric or dementia, that's the average age. And the average length of stay is about 18 months.
Mm.
So what we've done over the last 30 years is, as a country, we've done very, very well at keeping people at home for longer. And most of us will stay at home until we start to die. Now, most people don't die at home. We have this other idea, we have this magical idea in our heads that we just won't wake up one morning. Most people, that's not the case. And so aged residential care is also becoming the most common place where New Zealanders, older New Zealanders die, even if they were not living in aged residential care before they started to die.
Mm.
So most people will stay at home for the majority of their lives. One in five of us is going to have dementia. One in four of us is going to have dementia, but one in five of us is going to need, you know, either a secure facility, or we're going to suffer from psychogeriatric episodes, or we're going to become bedridden. And those are at levels of care that can be done if you have a whole lot of money at home, but most people don't have a whole lot of money at home, and so you do need care facilities.
Mm. Well, that's a very good presentation of the facts, and that's what people have to remember. I mean, it's all very well listening to stories about this person's experience and that person's experience and, oh, how awful that was and so on. But we need to keep a lookout at what's the norm, what can be expected, and what do we need to be doing about these things, because often people have unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you've raised a very good issue there. The only time you really hear about aged residential care is when the newspapers have trolled through what are all of the health and disability complaints, looked for the most serious of them, and decided to make a headline out of it. Now, I'm not making light of those complaints, and there is certainly every single complaint that is made, we need to learn from and we need to do better. But on any given day, like today, the whole of the country with regard to residential care is running at about 95% full. That means we've got about 38,000 to 39,000 New Zealanders who are right now today in residential care. And I recently OIA'd the Health and Disability Commissioner for the number of complaints that they receive about aged residential care. And it's way down in double digits, the number of complaints that they receive and that they then follow up on. So out of all of those 39,000 individuals in care, there's less than 1% whose family believes they've not been well cared for, or something has happened to them that needs to be investigated. And I would suggest to you that because we don't live in a perfect world, we're never going to get away from there being some complaints. But we must always learn from those complaints, as well as keep it in perspective.
I couldn't say it better myself. I totally concur with you, because you've got to have a perspective on things. You can't get just completely carried away with the experience of your particular relative in care. Mm. Yeah.
Because often that is what most people will have one interaction or one or two interactions with mum or dad or something. And again, don't take away from those interactions. Absolutely not. And if you're not happy with what you believe is the way that care is being delivered to your loved one in a care facility, then please go and talk to the manager immediately. And if you, you know, and if you're not, don't feel that you've got satisfaction from the manager, then ask who is the next person up the chain that you can speak to. But I think we need to all realise we all get old, we all start to die. So these are emotional times. We love the person that is in the care facility, and so it's quite a it's quite an emotional time for family, and they often have quite a high level of guilt because they haven't been able to look after that person at home, and there's very good reasons for that. If that person had cancer, we wouldn't expect a family member to care for them and cure them from cancer. So age, you know, aging is the same thing. It's not something that anybody's to blame for, but it is, it can get very complicated, the level of care that people need to have provided to them.
Indeed. What we need to think about now is how people get access to the kinds of support services they need. And for older people who are in a relationship, who've got a partner or a marriage, they will find that there are different journeys in aging and they're not happening in parallel. So somebody will have to move into some form of extra care. And how will that be factored in? I mean, for example, if you are if you've jointly gone into a retirement village apartment and one of you has to go to a care suite, then you've actually got to buy the care suite, buy the license to occupy it, and that might be quite expensive. So how do you there's all sorts of things you have to negotiate in this space.
I'm not sure. I can't speak for retirement villages, so I'm sorry.
No,
I'm just not okay with how that works. But I would say I don't believe that you have to buy an aura to get care in a care facility that is attached to a retirement village. I mean, that's not the only way that you can gain care. So I think there's so many variations on how you can access care that possibly we don't want people to be left with the impression that you must buy another aura on top of your current aura, that sort of thing. Because there's nobody that can force you to sell the independent living unit that one spouse is continuing to live in.
No.
The family home is protected. Nobody's going to force you to sell it because one of you has to go into care.
No.
But I do want to pick up on when we don't have the right amount of care available, and we've got 4 government-funded reports all talking about that we're around about 12,000 aged care beds short in this country. It's probably more like 15,000 now. And the sector is underfunded. So one of the things that we've been hearing more and more anecdotes about spouses being separated because there isn't the access to care where they in their community. And so like an example would be a gentleman I know, he and his wife needed to go into a secure dementia unit. He's in his 90s, she's in her late 80s, and the only secure dementia unit that was available for her was actually 4 to 5 hours drive away. Now, these people had been married for over 60 years. They'd been together all of those 60 years. And now, because of her health, because dementia is a health issue, because of her health, she now needed to be 4 to 5 hours away from him. Now, this gentleman in his 90s got up every morning, had his brekkie, got in the car and drove to see the woman he loves. And he stayed with her for the day and then every evening he drove back. And the person who told me this anecdote was his son. And 3 times he said, "Dad has fallen asleep at the wheel and driven off the road." So, but his dad, when his kids spoke to him, he said, "I'm not going to stop going to see your mother. I'm not going to stop visiting your mum every single day." So the best his kids could do was all pitch in and get him a newer car with all the bells and whistles from safety in there. Now, that's what we're doing to couples in this country because we are not planning and providing aged residential care close to communities. We must have facilities, and we can do it. They don't have to be big, ginormous facilities. And I'm definitely not talking about an Oceania or a Ryman's or a Somerset. I'm talking about the charities and the not-for-profits and the small owner-operators that are actually providing over 60% of the care in this country for older citizens. We can have those facilities close to where people live so that we stop separating couples who've been married for 60, 70 years, and we can, so that they can visit by just walking down the road, or at least it might only be a 10-minute drive. We can do that.
So this is actually an infrastructure issue.
Yes, there's multiple sides to this, but this is, in the first instance, it's an infrastructure issue. And we need to be supporting the creation of care facilities or the enhancement of what are current care facilities, like a rest home only facility, inside these towns, inside Ekitahuna and inside Woodville and those other places, so that they can provide more services to that particular town. And that's why we've been asking the government, whether it's this government or the next one, for an infrastructure grant fund, so that these charities, the not-for-profits and the rural and regional providers can actually enhance their facilities or build new facilities to deliver that service closer to home for New Zealanders.
Well, that seems like an absolute must, something that all parties should be able to sign up to.
Yes, well, I mean, basically I've given them the solution. They just need to go and... They just need to do what I tell them, Anne-Marie. I'm sure it'll be fine.
We'll talk about action later in the program. But I do think this is a very clear situation and a very clear solution, and there aren't many other alternatives other than pretending and with your head in the sand that this isn't actually happening.
That's right, and because there's no stopping it. The need's not going away.
No,
I mean we could ignore the fact that we don't have enough care beds. We could ignore the fact that small operators are losing money. We can ignore it, but all it does is those older New Zealanders will still be at home. They'll still be trying to manage on their own, or their families will still be trying to manage on their own, or we will get tragic situations like the situation down in the South Island last year where a son whose mother had become, who is suffering from dementia, the son took his mother's life and then took his own life because of the pressures of having to care in that way when you haven't been educated to it, you haven't been skilled for it, and you haven't got the support to give you a break.
Indeed. And that's not the only case where that's happened. It's actually happened before.
Yes,
and
that's right.
Those people end up going to prison, and that costs the taxpayer $99,000 or more a year to keep that person in jail.
And I mean, and the terrible guilt that we place on families when they ask for assistance or when the loved one does need to go into care, we need to be removing that. It is not a failure of families when the health and complexity of care of the person they love gets to a stage where they can't manage it. It's not their failure. It's our failure as a society if we don't support them.
Mm. Thank you for that. I really appreciate those strong words because they need to be said. We are facing uncertain times and lots of things are getting shaken up. And we know that there's Alpine 0.8 on our horizon. It's the really large shake-up that could occur any time in the next 50 years. While many South Island towns have done lots of preparation, scientists have gone in groups around these towns and talked to the people about what they're going to do and what it will mean for them. But very little awareness of this exists in Auckland, I'm afraid to say, even though we do mention it from time to time on air. But there are very strong efforts about emergency management planning going on, particularly led by Auckland Council. And then there's the national agency as well. So I'm very interested to know, because we've seen now the tragic cases of seniors trying to be moved out of facilities by bus in Spain, away from these terrible fires. And we know there are lots of people that are in the very hard to move category. In New Zealand, there must be people watching the television at night really worried about what would happen in New Zealand, what would happen in the next flood, how much of a risk do they run where they are, and not necessarily having anyone to talk to about it either. I'm just interested to know your thoughts about the emergency planning situation that we're in New Zealand.
Well, as I say, it's interesting you raise it, because we had I had one of the coordinators from NEMA, so the National Emergency Management Agency, came to see me, because, as you can imagine, as the acuity level of individuals who are in residential care increases, as you've got more and more individuals with psychogeriatric needs and dementia needs, it becomes more complex about moving them. We're now no longer talking about, at rest home level, there's less and less people at rest home level who can walk to a van and get in a van and be driven away. So we've actually, NEMA has asked us to sort of begin conversations with them. All of our care facilities have to have a plan about how to evacuate. They have to have a continuity plan. They have to have an emergency plan. So they've all got those plans, but now we need to be more strongly connected with the National Emergency Management Agency, so that if there are facilities who are finding that their plan is not quite working how it should, we need direct contact now. Rather than ringing 111, we need direct contact with the Emergency Management Agency so that we can get people there as quickly as possible to implement what would be, Plan B, I would imagine.
Yes. It's all this planning and all this starting the conversations, having the conversations, making people aware, lifting the accountability and bringing that into view, whose responsibility is what and for whom.
Yeah.
All these questions need to be answered in the plans. So thank you very much, Tracy. We're not going to be able to talk about robots today, but I can see that they could be the subject of the next interview, perhaps when the task force comes out with its recommendations. We could do a follow-up interview and we'll talk about robots.
And just get your listeners to ask any candidate, what are they going to do to make sure that they can, that your community can get access to aged residential care? Ask every candidate that.
Call to action. Thank you very much, Tracy. We've really welcomed you with open arms, because this is such an important question to ask. And farewell to the listeners. We hope you'll be online or in tune with us next week. Bye for now. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.
Diversity, the cultural diversity, the many languages, and the enrichment through all the different cultures, religions, faiths. I think that's fascinating.
I love going for really early morning walks under the Harbour Bridge. I love being able to get in my car and in 40 minutes being in one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. I find it really hard to think of what's missing in Auckland. I think you're pushing it there. Don't be so cheeky.
The people of this country, people of Auckland especially, are very, very friendly, and that makes you feel you're living with your kith and kin.
I just love our community. It's a sparkling city.
Loving Auckland, our diverse city. 104.6 Planet FM. Discover your voice at Planet FM. We're a not-for-profit, community-focused radio station offering brand new studios, training and support to help you create your own show. Whether you're a group or an individual with a story to tell,